The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome to The Big Lead. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Dory Monson this afternoon. The CDC has released a new COVID-19 guidance as it pertains to schools. Going to get into all that and much more. First time for The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So Nicole found this story breaking right as we were about to come on air. It says, in new COVID-19 guidance, CDC recommends 5 key strategies to reopen schools. I found this to be so deeply frustrating to read because really the strategy should just be everybody go back to school, right? It would be everybody, all the teachers, all the kids, we can all finally go back to school. But it's not. It's this kind of insane kind of amalgam of what we've already been doing. It's not really any kind of progress whatsoever. It says the 5 key strategies are the universal and correct wearing of masks, physical distancing, washing hands, cleaning facilities, and improving ventilation, and doing contact tracing, isolation, and quarantining. Keep in mind, I know that these all sound like fun buzzwords, sound like great ideas, right? But I think that we're missing the bigger picture here. We're talking about kids. Talking about kids who are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And I think what we're missing fundamentally is how much stress we're putting on kids during COVID-19. Think about, just, kids are incredibly susceptible to stress and what it means to have to go into a classroom and this idea that you can get your teacher sick at any point in time. This idea that you're carrying this disease that can get somebody ill at any point in time. Now, Nicole, you and I are roughly the same age. When you were a kid, the idea that someone came down with the flu, what would people do? Well, you would just go home and you would mind your own business. But now there's this idea that we have to have kids wearing the masks, social distancing. In my neighborhood, actually, they tried this out for a really brief period of time. They had the kids, before the weather got really bad, they had the kids actually physically outside. Standing outside, and they had their backpacks 6 feet apart. It's absolutely unbelievable. And I thought, are we not torturing these kids at this point in time with all these regulations? The data is in, by the way. Kids are so unlikely to spread COVID-19. They can get it, but the idea of asymptomatic transmission, it simply doesn't happen in kids. But we're treating kids as if there's the gross little grubby gremlins running around spreading COVID-19. When I read these CDC guidelines, I can only think that we're letting the virus now run our lives. You remember Trump? He said, Nicole, you remember when President Trump came out and he said, don't let the virus run your life. Don't let coronavirus run your life. And everybody said he was a fool. And look at what we're doing now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My cousin's kindergartner just went back to school last week for the first time this year. And this is kindergarten, so it's her first day of class ever. The virtual school was a big fail for them because the teacher just read a book to them every day. Well, that was not enough to keep her engaged. So she didn't really last very long in the virtual school. She went back last week and I said, well, did you meet any new friends and stuff? And her mom said, well, no, because they have a hula hoop they have to stay in. And they aren't allowed to talk or play with other kids. And I just think that is so sad because she enjoyed it because she knows no different. But the point is to learn how to socialize, to meet friends. And, you know, I went to the same school my whole life. So some of my kindergarten friends were my lifetime friends. And I just think it's so sad they're missing out on this.
Schools are designed to socialize kids. I mean, I think we can all admit that in many ways, schools are just kind of glorified daycares. You send your kids there, you hope they learn something, but mostly they're there to learn how to interact with each other. I saw a picture that absolutely broke my heart. It was a little girl. It was the first, this is all the way back in August. It was her first day of school, and she's 5 years old, and she's sitting at her dinner table with a computer in front of her, and she has to set up a Gmail account. A Gmail account! What does a 5-year-old girl need with a Gmail account? And yet, this whole fear complex that we've developed around COVID-19 is doing what for us? It's actually, I think we're going to see in probably, let's say, 8 years, 7 years, 9 years, we're going to see kids with complexes in the same way that maybe we saw kids after World War II walking around with PTSD. We're going to see, by 2030, kids walking around with some kind of complex around diseases and what it means to contract a disease. Think about the narrative that we're telling children. We don't tell them that mom and dad are likely going to be okay, and if they get COVID-19, they're statistically unlikely to die from it. We're telling kids, oh, you have to wear the mask all the time, and you have to wash your hands all the time. There was an article in the New York Times earlier this week about a woman who found out that her son, I think he was 7 or 8 years old, he had contracted COVID-19, and she was horrified of him, not of the disease. She was terrified of him and being around him. And so she isolated him in a room, and she was thinking to herself, what if I get COVID-19? What if I contract COVID-19? Can you imagine how selfish that is? Like, if I had children, and let's just say I had a son, and he was 7 or 8 years old, and he had COVID-19, I would tell my wife, listen, I'm going to be spending time with the boy in isolation. I wouldn't force him to be in a room alone, afraid. But that's what we're doing with these kids. We're gearing them up to spend their lives just absolutely miserable. And Jay Inslee, by the way, is doing nothing for that. Jay Inslee is saying that all but 6 Washington counties can relax some COVID-19 rules. He's announced that. Nicole, I think we got a bit of audio on that.
Yeah, we do, from yesterday. So our reporter, Hannah Scott, specifically, I didn't tell the story during the show yesterday, but it got told on the afternoon show, Tom and Curly. But my dad is 65 and has some health issues. My grandma is 81. And the week or possibly the day they announced that they were able to get vaccinated, they went online, got approved, and tried to make an appointment. They live in Skagit County. And both of them got appointments and have been pushed back a couple times. So they got appointments a couple weeks out, and then they've got their appointments pushed back a couple times. My dad was scheduled for a March shot, and my grandma, I think in a couple of weeks, she was originally scheduled. Well, then my dad got a call on Wednesday rescheduling him for April 27th. So he is in the first round right now, eligible for the vaccine, and they were scheduling him out to April, right? Which I just thought was insane.
Yeah.
So my aunt actually ended up doing some research and she called over to the Wenatchee, their mass vaccination site that they set up, and they had 236 appointments available yesterday. So they made appointments for my grandma and my dad, and they went over yesterday, drove to Wenatchee, got the shot and came home, got scheduled for their next shot. And as they were leaving, you know, scheduled, yeah, their March, whatever, after 21 days. And as they were leaving, there was 22 open spots still yesterday and a bunch of others today. Like, there's tons of appointments available on the east side of the mountains. And I just thought that that was interesting. And I wondered if we were being maybe... I think that, or if we were dividing the vaccine up appropriately, given the condensed population on this side of the mountains versus, you know, being a little spread out on that side of the mountains. And Hannah ended up asking that question of Inslee. So here's his answer.
Wondering, we heard from an elderly couple today from Skagit County, 81 and 65 years old, both with underlying health conditions. They'd been trying to get a local vaccine appointment that had been pushed back over and over again, all the way to April. And then they called the Wenatchee mass vaccination site and were told yesterday they had 246 open appointments for today. So they drove there to get it. I'm wondering if we're still having issues with the amount of vaccine being sent to more rural areas as opposed to cities, things of that nature. Any idea on why that happened?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question. You mean, why do people have to wait when we have 1.7 million people in line and only 115,000 doses coming a week? I'm not sure the nature of your question.
Which I thought was really ridiculous to begin with, because, I mean, I think it's obvious they couldn't get vaccinated over here. So they had to go to the east side, and I don't know if he just wasn't listening or what, but my dad was really offended by being called elderly, which Hannah later apologized for.
Hannah Scott is a national treasure. I would have not put up with that. Jay Inslee's attitude, his rhetorical attitude. I just got to say, Hannah Scott coming back and being able to maintain composure, I would have blown a gasket. I would have said, Inslee, that is as clear of a question as someone could pose. And you go, I'm not really so sure what the question is. How could you? It's just the dodging and the inconsistency and the bad policy. I think I got another section of that audio, right?
Yeah, here we go.
It's because
I'm wondering why people in Skagit County were having to have their appointments for vaccines pushed back over and over again. Went over in Wenatchee for the same day. There's 46 doses available the day before. So there was that many extra available for Wenatchee and not in Skagit County.
I think I understand your question. We're going to have these situations 1,000 times a day in the state of Washington. 1,000 times a day, someone will call a clinic close to their house and then find out someone farther away from their house has more doses available. And the reason that is these doses become available at different times. We can't predict exactly how many people will show up in the clinic at that particular time. And so the experience that these folks had is going to be replicated thousands of times a day.
Which I will say, he goes on from here. I think that is, again, a non-answer because obviously you can call one place, get it somewhere else, and that's, we're not asking about, you know, going down the street to somebody who didn't show up's appointment or whatever. It's, were we fair and did we divide it correctly between the sides of the state, right? But he did go on, so I think at that point, Hannah would have asked a follow-up regarding something to that nature, and he did address it without the follow-up necessary, which, you know, of course, he brought in equity. Here's the rest of his answer.
And I would love to tell you that we could solve that problem. We can't. And I'm just so happy that these folks did get a life-saving vaccine. It is very difficult to have an individualized decision across the state of Washington to get the right dose to the right house at the right time. Very difficult, and we're doing the best job we can. Now, the thing that I think, if I may, I think the interesting question is there a disparate distribution from county to county or between east or west or north or south?
Which was obviously the question to begin with. So he just is now getting around to the actual question that was asked, right? So here we go.
Attentive to that. We try to keep this as fair geographically as possible. So far, we have not seen significant or persistent evidence of that, but we're continuing to look for it. Now, we also have to address this equity issue. Look, we've got to get, you know, we've got to get some of these doses where people are not having access to it for a variety of reasons. So that comes into the picture as well. So this is not easy stuff when we have 1.7 million people waiting and 115,000 doses. And I'm just glad those folks were able to get it.
I am as well. But again, I think that what the question, and I think what is probably happening, like my personal theory of it is that, like I told you before, the east side of the state is a little more, has spread out. People have more space and there is a lot of hesitancy behind taking these vaccines. And over there, I think there's a lot of people that are like, I don't see people that often. I'm spaced out from my neighbors. I don't need the vaccine. I don't want to get the vaccine. And they're not getting it over here. We've got a lot more people that are very willing and want to get the vaccine as soon as possible. And so I'm wondering why, if there's all of these vaccines that are not getting, you know, used over there, why aren't they sending them our way over here? It doesn't, I'm wondering why that's not being addressed. But
and why throw out the phrase equity? What does equity have to do with getting people vaccinated? Other than for Inslee, I'm sure he needs to get his bona fides in. He needs to get his woke bona fides in so that the woke mob won't come after him. But
well,
for him to just kind of...
There was a story this week in the news that the Hispanic population, which has been more affected by the virus, more deaths, I guess, caused by the virus, there is probably a bigger Hispanic population on that side of the mountains. And so I think that they're trying, they have not been vaccinated to the percentage that they would like them to see vaccinated. So I believe they're leaving them over there and they're trying to get people to get this vaccine, but for some reason it's not being given. It's not getting used the way that they would like to see it be used over there. But again, my question to him is, what are we doing about that? Not just, yeah, that's a thing, but what are we doing about it?
Well, you can try all of the campaigns that you want. You can play all of the ads. You can do all of the commercials on television encouraging people to get the vaccine. But ultimately, it's an individual choice. My concern comes is when they start mandating it and they say, well, you can't go back to work, or you can't get on a plane, or that you can't, well, you already can't go back to school. But when you start mandating it and you take away people's ability to make that choice for themselves. And I mean, additionally, when you try to make it about equity, that doesn't follow along with the data. The Jerusalem Post released a story about a month ago talking about how they made the decision to vaccinate everybody at first over the age of 75, and then everybody over the age of 70, and then everybody over the age of 65. And they found something like a 75% decrease in that short period of time of deaths from COVID-19. So it would make sense, right, about access for people who are the most susceptible to the disease, not trying to figure out what's the most equitable way to distribute it. That's just trying to get your woke points in. And what I find so frustrating about this is COVID-19 has been kind of co-opted from being a virus that affects people, but now it is about social equality and equity and what it means for the country to have people get access to the vaccine, and it disproportionately affects these communities versus that communities. Is a pandemic racist, I ask myself? Is a pandemic this embodied thing that we've made it out to be? I mean, moreover, we use the word pandemic to describe COVID-19, and I think to myself, how much has it really affected people's lives? The virus itself. What really has affected people's lives are lockdowns, telling people that their kids can't go to school, telling people that they can't go to work. And so now, surprise of surprise, everything's going to open back up again, and we're all supposed to do what, right? We're all just supposed to go back to our regular lives. Are we all going to be wearing double masks again? There's actually some people saying, Fauci came out the other day. He said, well, even if you get the vaccine, you should still wear the mask and social distance. For how long, though? Because this is going to end, right? Americans know that this is all going to be done and over with, and we can all go back to our lives. We can all go back to concerts and sporting events and lectures. But is the plan to not have us go back to normal? Is the plan to have everybody just work remotely from now on and be totally separated and you can't see people? We're going to figure it out. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Dory Monson. We got to take a real quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson this afternoon. 98973 is the text line. Someone sent me a text. They said, why aren't you talking about the impeachment? And that what should I talk about when it comes to the impeachment? A show trial that basically has nothing? It's not constitutional. Chief Justice John Roberts is not presiding. Patrick Leahy is presiding over the trial, which makes him simultaneously a witness, a juror, and the judge. So you tell me. You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like kind of Soviet-style kangaroo courts. It's going to mean nothing. We already know that the Republicans in the Senate are not going to vote for it. So there you go. In what detail could we go into? Yeah. Nicole and I were talking about this before the show. What exactly could we do? How could we frame this impeachment other than what it is, which is a tremendous joke and a tremendous waste of time? And not only that, think about the cost. Okay, think about the cost of this quote unquote impeachment trial. It is $500 million. Now, if you're on the side of let's just say you think, yeah, he should be impeached. I hate Donald Trump. Would you rather have that $500 million? Would you rather have that go to, I don't know, let's just say we're going to give it to schools. Pick whatever you want. Pick your favorite place to just dump money into. We're going to give it to all the schools, or we're going to cut everybody a stimulus check. Would you rather have that or your show trial where Patrick Leahy is simultaneously, again, witness, juror, and judge? And does that sound fair to you? I would rather get away from it. I would rather we be done with it. But the problem is that the American media and also the Democrats have a fixation on President Trump it's an unhealthy amount. A very good friend of mine likes to call it Trump fascination syndrome. I like to call it Trump derangement syndrome, but they can't get away from it. And even now, Trump has been out of office for, what, 3 weeks? 3.5 weeks? Even now, we see people on CNN, they need him. They need to have him. They need to have him to talk about. It has to be the subject. They tried Marjorie Taylor Greene. Nobody was having fun with that. So now they're switching back to former President Donald Trump. And last night, Don Lemon doubled down on his hateful rhetoric about Trump voters and anyone who aligns themselves with the Republican Party after maliciously smearing millions of Americans on being on the same side as the KKK and the Nazis. What? He also falsely claimed Thursday night that Republicans condoned what happened at the Capitol. Here's a quick audio soundbite of what that sounded like.
Was horrible. When he gave us one of the biggest deficits we've ever seen.
They hold him up as a gold standard.
But I'm saying compared to these cats.
Hold on. When you look at what he actually accomplished, he didn't. He was horrible when it came to racial issues. He was horrible when it came to the AIDS crisis. He was horrible when it came to uniting the country. He didn't unite the country. He was a divider. And so they hold him up as a gold standard. Listen, I just think it's degrees, but I think the Republican Party
degrees
has been moving in this direction forever. Again, they are the party of everything that they're trying to pretend that they're not. Now saying, the people on the Capitol, that's not us. Yes, it is you. The people who are in Charlottesville, that's not us. Yes, it is you. Those people are not marching for Democrats. And this whole weird thing that they keep saying, well, what about the riots and the demonstration that happened this summer? That's apples and oranges. First of all, the demonstrations, the protests, were for something that's real. It was for inequality. It was for police brutality. It was for all those things. It was people who were rising up for their rights. What happened at the Capitol was built on a lie. Those riots that happened this summer were people who were capitalizing on the people who were out there who were fighting for things that were real. It's awful that you had those things, but guess what? Those people were not marching because Joe Biden or any other Democratic presidential candidate told them to go there and march and told them, hey, we're going to go take Portland. We're going to go take.
Yeah, that's all true.
Nobody did that. And so for them to compare the two is BS.
I don't know a single right wing commentator. I don't know a single one who has looked at what happened at the Capitol on the 6th and said, yeah, that was great. I love that. I don't know a single one. I've heard nothing but people coming out, and we all have to say the same phrase, by the way. I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but we all have to say, I condemn what happened at the Capitol. And it loses its meaning after a period of time because you say it so much. Every time the 6th comes up in conversation, for some reason, everybody on the right has to say, well, I condemn it. Doesn't everybody condemn it? Doesn't everybody just say that that was bad and it was horrible and awful? But for some reason, they have to just hammer down on this idea that people on the right were for it and that we all liked it and we were celebrating it. Absolutely not. I mean, if you look at what happened on the Capitol on the 6th, you have a bunch of kind of Duck Dynasty extras, a bunch of guys who hang out in AutoZone parking lots, and they all go to the Capitol and they all act like complete fools and complete morons, and they end up with egg all over their face, and now they're all getting arrested. I don't know if anybody, a single person who says, yeah, I'm on the side of those guys. I'm on the side of the guy, of a Viking man or a lectern man or the guy who went into Pelosi's. I don't know a single human being. I know a lot of people on the left who like to think that we enjoy it, who like to think that we all had a fine time with it. I actually went through, in my day job, I edit footage. And I went through as much footage as I could find online that wasn't major media footage. So I found people who had live streamed it or timestamped something on YouTube. I tried to put it in order. And you know what I see? I see a complete and total mess. I see a bunch of fools going to the Capitol and making a complete and total mess. Who could be in favor of that? Who would come out and say, yep, those are my guys. Those guys are on my team. No, no, thank you, Don Lemon. So Don Lemon has clearly missed the mark on this one. We don't like it. You can take my word for it as the ambassador to people on the right. We don't like it. We condemn it as well. No, thank you. We also don't like white supremacy. We also think that's pretty gross. And we don't like the KKK. I'm on behalf of everybody on the right. I'm just letting you know, we don't like those people. We want nothing to do with them. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Dory Monson. We got to take a real quick break. And when we get back, the Washington food industry is saying that Seattle grocery store hazard pay singles the industry out. Find out more when we get back. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Monson this afternoon. Nicole sent me this tweet, and I just thought it was hilarious. This is from WPC Olympia Watch, talking about Councilmember Sawant just got a lesson on the difference between hashtag WALIG and the Seattle City Council when it comes to decorum. So apparently she goes in having this debate over the capital gains tax bill. And now it is an income tax, but they're trying to say that it's not. And I find it just to be so disingenuous and so silly. And yet we have this argument constantly, constantly, constantly. But here's a quick clip of what that sounded like.
To fund COVID relief, affordable housing, and Green New Deal projects. The City Council...
Council member, can you please keep your comments... Can you keep your comments focused on the bill at hand, please?
It is focused on the bill at hand. Last month, state lawmakers told Crosscut that they will need to, quote-unquote, phase out Seattle's Amazon tax as part of enacting a statewide business
Council
tax
member,
measure.
That's not related to the current bill.
I'm sorry. I have a constitutional right to testify, and you should not be interrupting
me. In matters of decorum, we need you focused on the bill at hand.
No, you are completely subverting the Constitution. Public comment, impugning the intentions, even as you said, is 100% protected by the First Amendment. Would you please let me continue?
If it is focused on the bill at hand, Council
Member. It is focused on every bill that you will talk about on taxing wealthy and big business. So please let me continue. Last month, state lawmakers told Crosscut that they will need to, quote unquote, phase out Seattle's Amazon tax as
Council
part of
Member,
the
Council Member, I've asked you measure. Three times to stay focused
that
on the bill at hand.
That they wanted to avoid, quote unquote.
I'm sorry. I've asked everybody to stay focused on the bill at hand and to honor decorum. And that is not, I've asked you three times to stay focused on the bill at hand. This is not a reference to the bill that passed in the city of Seattle. Thank you, Council Member.
Oh, girl. I mean, I wish we all had one of those buttons in our own personal life where you just say, hey, could you just stay on topic? Could you please just stay on topic? Would you please just stay on topic? And if the person just doesn't do it, you get to hit the button and then they have to leave. When I talk to people about why power freaks me out or why control freaks me out, when I try to explain to people what power does to somebody, I often cite people like this. I often cite this kind of example, because if you look at the corrupting element of power, she doesn't even recognize that she's being asked to stay on topic. What is she doing? She's trying to steamroll the entire conversation because she feels like she can. If you were having that interaction, if you were there and you're talking about the bill and you're trying to move through it and you're trying to express your thoughts on it, would you go off on this weird tangent? Would you go off on all these different places trying to, oh, well, I have to get all these other issues involved? No, right? That's not what people do. But because she has been in a position for so long where people just accept the things that she says, she's used to that. She's used to that. And I don't buy her argument about, oh, well, you're violating my constitutional right to speak. I don't buy that whatsoever. She's trying to steamroll and take control of the entire conversation and completely subverting the decorum, which is what I think we need to get back to that. I think we need to get back to that fundamentally, where we accept the rules that are in place during a conversation, especially at that level, at the state level. Maybe we've gotten too used to this idea of the gotcha moment or the slam dunk moment or that moment where you get that excellent sound clip, which I think she was looking for. She was looking for that sound clip to show everybody where she says, look at everything that I presented. And this is the kind of thing that I fear fundamentally. Nicole, tell me if I'm off base about that, but it's something about it is just so off-putting, and you see how it changes people, and you see how it alters somebody's mind fundamentally.
Well, I think this whole thing was just so scripted to her because it's her usual spiel. And it was so scripted, she couldn't handle like being interrupted until she had to stick to a different script does not work for her because she has no other script. So she had to just power through. And that wasn't acceptable in the rest of the state, I guess, because she's used to Seattle just accepting whatever she throws out there.
I wonder when people are going to get tired of the kind of socialist rhetoric, when they get really tired of, because you have all these big lofty ideas within socialism when people talk about socialism. And Sawant very proudly comes out and she says, I'm a socialist. But I wonder, for people who are moderates, I'm not talking about followers, I'm not talking about devotees, I'm talking about people who are just moderates. When are you going to get tired of this kind of discussion? When are you going to get tired of all of the rhetoric? And when are you going to see that it's just not working out? It's not working out whatsoever. Nicole and I were talking about the wealth tax. We were talking about, well, what's going to happen when Jeff Bezos has to pay close to $2 billion a year in wealth tax for being in the state of Washington? He's going to leave. He's going to go somewhere else. He's going to get an address somewhere else, and he's going to leave. And this is what people don't understand. When you talk about taxing people and this wealth tax or capital gains tax, what do people do? Gas tax, they leave. They go somewhere else. You see that across the country. Everybody, for some reason, is going to Austin, Texas, or Tennessee, or Florida. No one wants to be a quote-unquote coastal elite anymore because it's just becoming too expensive. So I don't blame people when I talk to people and they say, yeah, I got to get out of the state of Washington. I just can't handle it anymore. I can't handle all of the rhetoric. I can't handle all of this nonsense that's going on in my community. I mean, if you were to raise taxes on people, or let's just say we get the gas tax happens, and everybody's got to pay, what, $1.50 more overall? This is going to affect people in such a fundamental way, the people at the bottom. If everybody just takes off, if everybody just leaves, and there's no more job creation, and everything just stagnates, this is the thing that I constantly try to stress to my very liberal friend. This is the consequence of those decisions. People leave. Businesses leave. If you make a climate that is not healthy for a business to succeed in, they leave. We're actually going to get into that later in the show. Something like 160 businesses have closed since the beginning of the pandemic, or they have left. So when are we just going to wake up and realize that these things won't work? That these things won't pan out, and that you can get the fun soundbite and you can get the fun script and you can go out there and you go, this is my constitution. You can do all that. But in application, it's just not going to work. I'm Jack Stein filling in for Mr. Dory Monson. We got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.